Throughout the oil sands lobbying struggles of 2009, ExxonMobil's executives were indignant about the issue, an oil industry lobbyist involved recalled. The corporation's internal analysts and lobbyists saw Section 526 and Obama's consideration of similar limits on Canadian imports as more of an affront to the industry than a legitimate public policy dilemma. Canada's politics concerning the oil sands were complicated, but as a practical matter, there was virtually no chance that Alberta's provincial politicians or the country's national leaders in Ottawa would seriously limit Canada's production in the years ahead. Too much national wealth was at stake. For its part, ExxonMobil's Syncrude subsidiary possessed licenses to operate in Alberta through 2035. Its holdings totaled at least 734 million barrels as of the end of 2008. A separate oil sands project called Kearl, in which ExxonMobil was invested, would soon produce another 110,000 barrels per day in bitumen. All this meant, from ExxonMobil's perspective as a global corporation, that it did not necessarily have a Washington lobbying issue concerning the Alberta sands at all. If the United States were dumb enough, in the corporation's estimation, to restrict Canadian imports, then ExxonMobil would just sell the same oil to Asia. It did not even seem obvious to ExxonMobil why the oil industry should spend so much time and money lobbying on the issue in Washington, building consumer front groups, buying ads in newspapers, enduring accusations that it was out once again to destroy the environment, so as to convince the Obama administration and Congress to see Canada as a strategic friend and a source of energy security. To ExxonMobil's representatives, Canada's relative desirability as an oil supplier seemed one of the more obvious propositions in foreign and energy policy. If the Obama team did not agree, let it explain its thinking to the American public. The whole industry was pretty pissed off about it, the lobbyist involved recalled. In March, Teresa Fariello, Dan Nelson's successor as head of ExxonMobil's K Street office, settled on a $1.4 million four-bedroom townhome in a tree-shaded, secluded section of Georgetown. Her arrival as a Democrat representing Irving's interests in Obama's Washington marked the most significant investment Tillerson had yet made in a political strategy of his own. Fariello had grown up in modest circumstances, and some of her acquaintances thought of her ascension as ExxonMobil's chief Washington lobbyist as an American success story. During the late Reagan administration, the first Bush presidency, and much of Clinton's presidency, Fariello had lobbied for Occidental Petroleum in Washington. She had been active as well in the pro-business wing of the Democratic Party. One of the party's leading dealmakers, perennial presidential candidate and New Mexico Governor Bill Richardson, had hired Fariello at the Department of Energy during Clinton's second term. As Democrats left federal office after George W. Bush's disputed election, ExxonMobil recruited Fariello to its public affairs operation. She moved to Irving and worked closely with Ken Cohen during the Bush presidency. More than any ExxonMobil executive in Cohen's departments, she managed channels to Democratic lobbyists and allies during the Bush years. While considering the dilemmas that Obama, Harry Reid, and Nancy Pelosi posed to the corporation, Fariello and Cohen had developed a multifaceted plan to bring ExxonMobil in from the political cold and to make the corporation more relevant in an age of Democratic ascendancy. Tillerson's carbon tax endorsement was just one prong. Cohen authorized contributions to the Clinton Global Initiative to advance and publicize ExxonMobil's global programs on women's rights. He designated Lori Jackson, an African-American lobbyist in the Washington office with graduate degrees from Stanford University and Harvard University, to represent this charitable and policy push at public events. ExxonMobil also announced that summer a potential $600 million investment in algae-derived biofuels that might replace gasoline one day, in partnership with the genetic researcher J. Craig Venter. The investment plan involved deep scientific uncertainties, but it did conform to ExxonMobil's criteria in considering alternative energy initiatives, namely, that it would invest only if the payoff would be relevant to its core businesses and would be potentially scalable and transformative. The algae announcement won widespread and uncritical news coverage. It appeared that ExxonMobil had finally internalized BP's example that, in calculating the full costs of alternative energy investments, Unpopular big oil companies should factor in the marketing benefits of free, favorable publicity. In Washington, Fariello invited State Department officials, ambassadors, congressional staff, and other influential arrivals to Obama's administration to hear ExxonMobil's Energy Futures briefing, its Gospel of 2030. The corporation purchased billboard space in the Washington Nationals' new baseball stadium on the Anacostia River and erected image ads depicting ethnically diverse ExxonMobil scientists and engineers surrounded by photographs of molecules and other scientific signifiers. The strategy was working, Cohen told the management committee in Irving. ExxonMobil's favorability ratings in its internal American and Canadian public opinion polling soared during 2009, from about 30% favorability the year before to about 50%. The internal polls showed that all of the big oil companies, ExxonMobil, BP, Chevron, and Shell, had recovered some of their public reputation in the United States, more or less in tandem. Perhaps the ratings were best understood as simply a reflection of public feeling about retail gasoline prices, which plunged during 2009 because of the recession. The strategy overall, said an executive involved, was premised on the belief that Democrats in Obama's Washington don't want BS. They don't want greenwashing. Let's establish a tone. We are prepared to disagree, and hopefully we can think about it in a way that's mutually respectful. ExxonMobil was partially constrained, however, by the fact that its Democratic Party connections were heavily located in the failed presidential candidacy of Hillary Clinton. Teresa Fariello had worked actively to support Hillary Clinton's candidacies for Senate and President. Moreover, the principal Democratic lobbyist Fariello worked with in Washington, David Leiter, a former chief of staff to Senator John F. Kerry, Democrat, Massachusetts, happened to be married to Tamara Luzzatto, Hillary Clinton's chief of staff, in her Senate office during the 2008 campaign.